Hey, welcome to the Foundry Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to hear future messages. We hope you're blessed and encouraged by this message today.
Good morning. Good morning. Can everybody hear? Yeah, good. Good morning. I got to be honest with you. You guys make me really uncomfortable when I clap coming up here because I'm not used to that. When I come out of the locker room, everybody boos and calls me names. And so I'm going to step off the stage. We're going to redo that. And I'm going to ask you to boo. Now I feel like I'm right at home. That is good. That is good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Well, it's an honor to be here this morning, and we're going to have fun. We're going to do some different things today. You know, I joke with Pastor Tim all the time. I say he's got the easiest job in the world because he gets to come up here, preach a sermon, and it's a one-way form of communication. He stands here, delivers it, and there's no feedback. There's no questions. There's no, and the guys that I work with, Sean and other guys, it's awesome because we're back and forth and they're constantly challenging me. So we're going to do some different things this morning, and I hope you're okay with that, but we're going to have some fun. The first question I want to ask you, and this is why I brought up this mannequin. I brought this in this morning, and Nate, one of our guys, goes, "Hey, it's a preacher carrying a dummy." And I said, "Well, which one's the dummy?" And he didn't answer. But anyway, what are your thoughts? And I want to hear your feedback. Literally, raise your hand or just speak out. What goes through your mind when you see this, when you see that uniform? What goes through your mind? You can be as honest as you want this morning. Sorry, lost? Blind? Law. Okay, law. What else? Sorry? Structure? Rules? What else? Thank you. Controversy? Kansas City Chiefs. I should have known better than to invite Jay. What else? Any other thoughts come to mind? Safety. Okay. Yeah. Replay. Yeah. You know, one of the guys this morning asked me, why do you think officials are under so much scrutiny today? And that's a good question, because I do think it's increased significantly. One of the reasons why is because of gambling. Gambling's become a big part of our game, and it's become it's added a lot of scrutiny to what we do. And just technology. I mean, the advancement of technology and instant replay and high-definition television and frame-by-frame and analysis. And quite honestly, and this is, I get to speak on behalf of my official brethren, announcers that don't know the rules, quite honestly, sometimes add to the problem. But I'll just leave it at that. What I want to talk about today, and kind of the title of my message, is called Winning from the Background. It's lessons from the NFL field that have changed my definition of success. And before we get started this morning, what I have here are a couple things you're probably familiar with. You've probably seen these before. These are the flags that we use on the field. And so we're going to do something different. I'm going to ask for a couple of people to volunteer. You can stay in your seat, but I'm going to ask you to volunteer to be an official, a referee this morning of our message. Does anyone want to do that? You guys want to be one? Okay, there you go. There's one. Somebody else? Back there in the back. There you go. So here's how it's going to work. If I say something here this morning that you either disagree with or you have a question about, feel free to throw your flag. Okay? You get to interrupt the process today. I give you that permission. Tim would never do this, I promise you. So let's just practice. Let's practice. So if I say something you disagree with or you have a question about, this is when you'd throw the flag. For example, if I said the Denver Broncos have no chance of winning the game today. No, you got to throw it at me. You got to throw it up here. Not at your neighbor. Sorry? Yeah, exactly. So that's one example. Here's another one. Pastor Tim is an accomplished archery hunter. This would be a time to throw the flag. There you go. See, I don't think he's ever killed anything with his bow, but I don't remind him of that very often, just so you know. Here's one I want to start off with, and it's this phrase. Winning in God's kingdom has far less to do with performance and visibility and everything to do with surrender, faithfulness, and humility. I want to talk a little bit about my journey in officiating. I call it calling without an ambition, because the way it all came about is 12, 13 years ago, we had this guy that was living in our basement. He was going through a difficult time in his marriage, and we were just kind of helping him out and allowing him to live in our basement. He came home one day, and he said, "Jeff, I got an idea. I'm going to go sign up to be a referee, and I'm going to take this class to get certified so you can do junior high and high school games. Do you want to do it?" And I go, "Yeah, I love football, and I love, you know, I just love the game, and I want to stay close." And so he said, "Why don't you come with me? It's on this Saturday." I signed up. Well, I showed up, and he didn't. And so I went through the class, and a couple of my friends at that time were officials at the college level, and they introduced me to a man who's here today. His name's Mark Ussery, and Mark played a significant role in my life and mentored me in the early years of officiating. And he kind of took me under his wing, and for some reason, he saw something in me and invested in me. And after that first year of officiating, you can put up that next screen there that kind of shows my journey. By the way, that picture in 1989, my senior year in college, that was my first exposure to officiating. We refereed a junior high football game. I did one game and fell in love with it then. Put it aside until 2013 when I started working with Mark. And we were doing junior high games together and a few high school games, freshman and JV games. And at the end of that first season, Mark says to me, "Would you like to be a development official for the RMAC, Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference, Division II conference throughout Colorado in this region?" I go, "What's a developmental official?" He says, "Well, just show up. We have this clinic in June. Come to Colorado Springs. Show up to this clinic, and you'll learn more about it and just kind of observe." I show up. There's 100 guys in the room. I'm sitting in the back. I know no one. And the supervisor of the Rocky Mountain Athletic Conference of Officials, a guy by the name of Gene Bauman, is up front, and he's talking to the officials of the RMAC. And he says, "We got a few changes on crews this year." And he names off a couple guys, and he goes, "Is Jeff Hutchin here?" I'd never met Gene Bauman. I'm sitting in the back, and I sheepishly raised my hand, and he said, "Jeff, you're going to be a head linesman on the Rivera crew this year in the RMAC." So I go from doing junior high games to Division II football games in one season, which is absolutely unheard of, and I wasn't about to tell anybody my level of experience. And I just faked it. And I was in the RMAC there, as you can tell, from 2014 to 2017. It's a picture of one of my crews. I was fortunate enough to be promoted up into the Mountain West Conference, Division I Conference from 2018 to 2020. I then moved up to the Pac-12. That's me and Coach Sanders having a nice conversation. You can tell he's very pleased with us and me in that moment. Not. And then was a rookie in the NFL last year in 2024 and just completed my second year. So that's kind of my... that's my journey, and I never set out to be an NFL official. That was never my goal. But through God's favor, I was able to reach that level, and that's where I currently work. A couple things I want to talk about today. Words that weren't necessarily shared from you when I asked you, what do you see when you look at this jersey? But things that we strive for as officials are things like excellence, influence. Some people mentioned that, faithfulness and stewardship in what we've been given. Now, these are things that would apply to just about any professional pursuit that any of us might have. But what happened for me over the last couple of years, and certainly during my time in the Pac-12 and Mountain West and the Rocky Mountain, the Lord began to redefine for me what these words meant, what it means to be excellent, what it means to have influence, to be faithful, in the stewardship we have. So even though I'm not going to specifically address each one of these points throughout the message, you're going to see elements of excellence and influence and faithfulness and stewardship woven through my message today, and hopefully you'll see how the Lord has redefined these things for me. What I didn't know when I started the NFL last year was that God wasn't just going to test my ability at the highest level, but quite honestly, the biggest lesson I learned is he was going to reveal my heart. See, Proverbs 19:21 says this: "Many are the plans of a person's heart, but it's the Lord's purpose that prevails." See, when I stepped in the NFL, I had a perception of what this was going to be, what this experience was going to look like. But God had a completely different plan. And it's been an incredible journey. And I've been challenged in so many ways, but it's really forced me to take a look at me. And he's used the NFL platform to do that. And I'm going to share some stories and talk about ways that that actually has unfolded. But the first thing I want to talk about is when reality hits harder than expectation. I don't know what I expected when I stepped into the NFL. I knew it was going to be a challenge, but I didn't realize just how difficult it was going to be. Let me give you an example. This is the NFL rule book. It's single-spaced, probably 10 font, and this is what we have to learn. And not just what we have to learn, but what we have to memorize. And then not only just memorize and understand what it means, but then you actually have to execute it on the field. And we have other books. This is just one example of many of other books we use that tell us once you identify that there is a foul, this is actually how you enforce that foul. And if you read this, it would probably look like a different language to you, only because it is in most time. And so I spent a huge portion of my career, 10 years, understanding the college rule book. And I'm by no stretch of any imagination an expert of the college rule book, but I felt like I understood the college rules pretty well. Then I step into the NFL, and they hand me this, and they basically say, everything you learned in college, you can forget. And you need to relearn all over again. It would be like, for those of you that are mathematicians, understanding all the formulas of geometry and algebra, getting them all down, and then they say, every formula you understood, you can erase. And you have to start all over again. And it really was that dramatic of a change when expectations and reality hit. The people ask me all the time, what's the biggest difference between the college game and the NFL game? And certainly the speed of the athletes, the athleticism. You take the best player on any college football team, and they have a less than 1% chance to make it to the NFL. So you're talking about the cream of the crop, the most athletic, gifted people on the planet. I mean, I encounter guys that are my height, 6'8", weigh 100 pounds more than I can do, can dunk a basketball and do a backflip standing. That's the kind of athletes we're talking about. So their speed, their athleticism. But what's required of us on the NFL field is such a high level of precision on how we evaluate a play, how we evaluate an action on the field, and then the analyzation of that, the scrutiny that we're under. And I'm not even talking about you, the fans. I'm used to the boos. I'm used to the coaches yelling at me. I'm not even talking about the scrutiny at that level. I'm talking about the scrutiny at the supervisor level, the people that I answer to, the people that analyze us and grade us. By the way, people ask, what's that like? We get graded, in case you're wondering, we as officials get graded on every play from every position, whether or not a flag was thrown or not. So they're evaluating not only if you threw a flag, was it accurate, but should you have thrown a flag? That's the obvious ones. But then they also analyze, were you standing on the right place? Was your movement correct? Did you put yourself in the best position to make a judgment on that particular call? So all those things from every position on the field, for every play, we get graded. Can you imagine if your life was graded at that level? If somebody watched you every moment of every day and analyzed every move that you make. That's just an example of some of the scrutiny we're under. So if you wonder at home watching a play and watching a game, and you think an official missed a call, which we do, but if they do, do you ever wonder, I wonder if they get in trouble for that? Do they get called out for that? Have you ever thought about that in your own mind? The answer is yes. So it requires what we do, extreme focus for 3+ hours on a Sunday afternoon. When you watch the game today, and I realize I'm the only thing that stands between you and the kickoff for the Broncos. I'm fully aware of that, okay? Which, by the way, I appreciate a lot of football jerseys in here. You make me feel like I'm at home, so that's a good thing. But when you watch the game today, realize that those officials never get a break. They never get to come off the field. They never get to sit on the bench and get rest and get water and while the other team goes out on the field. There is a third team on the field, and those guys get no rest. And by the way, no one cheers for them. I like to say every game we have is a road game. But there's no plays off. There's no substitutions. There's no hiding. One of my supervisors, Greg Burks, who now runs the Big 12, he said this one time at a conference in a clinic, and I've always remembered it. He said, I'm going to tell you something about this game. You cannot fake it. You cannot fake it as an official. This game will expose you. And that scared me to death. And it drove me to study, to study, to study as much as humanly possible. I want to tell you guys a story that happened one time about this issue of when expectations or reality is harder than expectations. This is a game where we had the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. This was last year. And it was a national game. Some of you probably saw this game. And this is a very pivotal moment in the game. I'm on the Kansas City Chiefs sideline, where I line up on the field. I'm on the sideline, so I'm in front of the coaches, which is great because I get to have wonderful conversations with coaches and players. But I'm on the Kansas City Chiefs sideline. Buffalo's driving. They're on about the 25-yard line going in. Pivotal moment in the game. Josh Allen drops back, and he throws a pass across the middle. The Bill receiver catches it, runs in for a touchdown. It's in Buffalo. The crowd is going crazy. We line up for the extra point, they kick the extra point, and then everything shuts down. We go to TV timeout. I'm standing on the Kansas City Chiefs sideline, speaking of the Chiefs, Jay, standing on the Kansas City Chiefs sideline, waiting for the kickoff and the TV timeout to be over, and I look over and I see this assistant coach for Kansas City sprinting towards me. He wasn't bringing me Gatorade, if that's what you're wondering. He's sprinting towards me, and he has a very disturbed look on his face. We'll just say that. And he bellies up to me, and he's screaming at me, Jeff, you blew the call. You blew it. You blew it. I mean, he's just losing his mind. And I said, Coach, what's wrong? And he goes, there was offensive pass interference on that play. That's why that receiver was so open. You missed the call. And I said, explain to me what happened from your perspective. He explained in great detail what happened and what transpired and why the receiver got open. And I looked at this coach and I said, Coach, if what you just described actually happened, then we missed it. He should have seen the look on his face. It like drained everything out of him. All the energy left him. All the anger left him. And he just kind of went, wow, I appreciate that. And he turned around and he walked off. And in that moment, it taught me a very valuable lesson to help me redefine what winning looks like. If I chose to be prideful in that moment, I could have argued with him and told him all the reasons why it wasn't. But in that moment, I didn't choose to be prideful in that moment. Instead, I choose to humble myself. You know what's powerful about humility? Is that pride will always defend, but humility disarms. Like football, life will expose your weaknesses. But like football, you never know when that's going to happen. Here's the truth, folks. God isn't asking us for our perfection. He's inviting surrender. He's inviting us to be humility, to offer humility. And then I kind of came up with this general thought that I could live by, and it's this. As officials and in life, perfection is expected. But as we know, perfection is impossible. But humility is achievable. Can we all agree with that? Thanks for not throwing the flag. Perfection is expected, but perfection is impossible, but humility is achievable. 1 Peter 5:6 says this, humble yourselves. This is interesting. Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he might what? Lift you up in due time. Isn't that cool? It's not pride that rises us to the top. It's instead humility. So when we submit ourselves and surrender, it says that God will lift us up in due time. The second thing I want to talk about is pressure. There's a lot of pressure on an NFL football field. I mean, there's times when you're standing on the field, there's 80,000 people in the crowd, you know there's 20 million people tuned in to television, it's the national game of the week, it's fourth down, 3 yards to go, and the team that's behind needs a touchdown to win. That's pressure. I wish I could take you with me and set you next to me in those moments, because in those moments, it is palpable, the pressure. You can feel it. Not only is the crowd rising up, you've got anxiety that's increasing on the sidelines. Players' energy levels go up. Your heart rate and your breathing goes up. You can feel it in the moment. And pressure is a powerful, powerful thing. But let me tell you something. Pressure didn't create things in me. Instead, it revealed what was already there. Think about that in your own life. Pressure doesn't create anything in us. It just reveals what's already inside here, and that's truly what happened to me. You see, the NFL, it didn't expose my strengths. Instead, it brought forth my weaknesses, and one of my weaknesses that the Lord revealed to me was my need for approval. Can anybody else relate to that? And I'm not even talking about you, the fans, or even the coaches or the players. Where I was finding my need for approval was from my peers and from my supervisors, and I put way too much influence into what they thought. An evaluation began to determine my identity. Evaluation began to impact my mood. Evaluation even began to impact my self-worth. And what I realized about myself is I had, and I have, a fractured identity. You see, the most dangerous place to live is needing to prove that you belong. Let me say that again. The most dangerous place that we can live is needing to prove that you belong. You see, when evaluation and what other people think about you becomes your identity, peace becomes impossible. Said another way, if approval determines your worth, anxiety will rule your life. Can anybody relate to that? If approval determines your worth, anxiety will rule your life. You know, for me, and this is embarrassing to talk about, but in the NFL, the way it would work, after a Sunday game, we turn in all of our paperwork, all of our information goes into a computer system, it goes to New York, and there's a grader that grades our game. And like I said, looks at every position, every play, and your grades come out. And let me just say this, Mark, you know this, they don't point out the great things you did. They don't say, oh man, that was a great call for holding there, or man, it's beautiful how you moved on that play, or it's not a positive reinforcement system. They point out the negatives. It's just the way it is. And so Sherry, my wife, would joke, kind of, I think, and say, Tuesdays were called terrible Tuesdays or terrific Tuesdays, depending on how the grades came out. If I had a well-evaluated game, it was a terrific Tuesday, and the house wasn't impacted. If I didn't, it was a terrible Tuesday, and everybody suffered. I hate to admit that, but they became that overwhelming and that controlling in my life. Proverbs 29:25 says this, "The fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord will be kept safe." Why is it that we allow our performance and the way other people evaluate, why does that feel safe? Something to think about. There's symptoms. If you say, I wonder if this applies to me, or how can I know when these things are beginning to drive and affect my life? Here's some symptoms for you. Emotional highs and lows. Really, really high highs and really low lows. Your performance, when you do well, you feel great about yourself. When you don't, you're down. Shame after mistakes. Defensiveness. Anxiety. Depression. I'm going to admit something to you. I'm going to be transparent with all of you. I had a really good season this year, but I found in week 3, I was dealing so much with anxiety and depression, I had to start taking medicine for it. What is that about? What is that about? Talk about a fractured identity. Just trying to be real with you guys. Relationships begin to suffer. Productivity declines. And I have on here escape behavior. You know what I mean by that? Each one of us has an escape. When things get tough, when things get challenged, when pressure becomes overwhelming, when maybe we don't perform as well, we all have an escape. It's different for all of us. For some people, it's alcohol. Some people, it's drugs. Some people, it's you just unplug and you go run. Some people, some it's healthy behavior. Sometimes it's unhealthy behavior. But we all have the thing that we go to and realizing what that is about ourselves. You know, what's interesting is Jesus never experienced any of these behaviors. Have you ever asked yourself the question, why? Because when pressure was applied to him, his true identity was revealed. In Matthew 4, and we're going to talk more about this in a moment, but Jesus was tested and tempted in the wilderness, and we know what transpired there. See, I knew intellectually what it meant to have a healthy identity based and founded in Christ and his approval of me, but my heart hadn't caught up to what my head already knew. And I had a performance awakening. This really happened between the middle of last year, my rookie year, and this year. And that performance awakening was this, that instead of trying to outperform, I needed to learn how to surrender to the moment. I can't keep doing this the same way. The spotlight is bright and the stakes are high, and this wasn't a place to fake it. I'm not talking about the knowledge of the game or the rules. I had a pretty good grasp of all those things. I knew it was something deeper, and it required me to do what I call soul work. What is soul work? Some of you have heard me talk about this before, but the human is comprised of three components. We have our spirit, we have our soul, and we have the body, the physical, the flesh. What I'm talking about is that blue area there, the soul work, and that's where we find our mind, the way we think, our emotions, the way we respond to the world, and the will, the desires of our heart. And I knew if change was going to take place in me, it wasn't being more prepared and watching more film. For me, for transformation to occur, it had to come in the soul. You know, the NFL is a microcosm of life, I say a lot of times. So many things in life are beyond control. It's chaos, isn't it? The NFL game is simply controlled chaos from snap to tackle, and sometimes in between. I'll tell you guys a story. It happened in that same game, as a matter of fact, just ironically. The Bills and the Chiefs. And it was a high-pressure moment. You can go put that picture up for me. It was a high-pressure moment in this game. And a major fight broke out, as it oftentimes does. And these players were going at it. This linebacker here for Buffalo and this tight end, some of you are probably pretty famous guy for the Chiefs, got in this fight. And by the way, I love fights on an NFL football field. I really do. It's a weird confession. I love them. I guess the reason why is I'm kind of like a Superman in this thing, because you can't touch me. They get fined a lot of money if they touch me, and so you can kind of step into those moments. As long as they recognize that you're there, you have to make sure you make your presence known, which, as you can see here, I'm doing that. By the way, I'm a pretty big guy, and look at me compared to some of these guys on the football field. pretty big dudes. So I step in the middle of this particular fight. I get in this player's face, and he's got crazy eyes. Have you ever seen someone like that? They are literally checked out. They are not there mentally. They are checked out, lost his mind. All he's thinking is, I'm going to kill this guy that's across from me right here. And when I stepped in the middle of these guys, he looked right past me, through me, and he had blood in his eyes, and he was going to kill somebody. And so when I stepped into this moment and I began to grab him, let me ask you this question. What if his teammate would have stepped in there and tried to control him and pull back? What would have probably happened? He wouldn't have listened, would he? He would have shoved him out of the way and continued forward. But when I stepped into that moment and I looked him in the eyes and I said to him, I go, Travis, I got his attention. He now looked at me and I said, I got this. And just like that coach on the sideline, you could just see him return, like an out-of-body experience. And he came back into the moment and he took a deep breath and he relaxed and we were able to control the moment and take care of things. So what happened? What happened there? What do you think transpired in that very moment? What did Travis realize in those brief seconds that I interrupted him? Someone, an authority, that has the ability to do something about the situation has now entered into the equation. He recognized the authority that we've been given as officials on a football field to do something about it. And it taught me an incredibly valuable lesson in this moment. That we must learn to surrender in pressure moments, in chaotic moments that we all have. We all must learn to surrender to the one that has the authority to control, change, or transform our environment or our situation. We know who that is, don't we? Romans 12:2 says this. Do not be conformed to the patterns of this world. In other words, don't do things the rest of the world does it. But instead, what? Be transformed by a renewing of the mind. Some translations say transformation begins with the renewing of the mind. I think that's actually a more accurate translation of what's being said here. Here's the point. You can't outperform pressure. You have to learn to surrender to it. And you know what? That's counterculture. That's counter to our thinking, is it not? When pressure comes, how do we approach pressure usually? I'm going to go outperform it. Not surrender to it. Surrender is not a word we use in this culture in a very positive light, is it? So we have to begin to redefine and understand what it means to surrender. We're going to talk about that. Look at this in Mark chapter 4, famous story you guys have read before. So Jesus and the disciples are doing ministry. They're at the Sea of Galilee. Jesus says, we're going to get in the boat and we're going to go to the other side. So they all load up in the boat. Jesus says, I'm going to take a nap. He goes and he falls asleep in the boat. The disciples and Jesus are heading across the Sea of Galilee when a squall comes. If you've ever been to Israel and you've been in the Sea of Galilee, you understand how quickly a storm can come upon you. The storm comes upon you, it comes upon them, and they are freaking out. Pressure has come. Chaos is upon them. Jesus is asleep. The disciples approach Jesus. Jesus, wake up. Don't you see that we're about to die? And we pick up the story, and it says that Jesus got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down and became completely calm. And he said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And they were terrified, and they asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey. You see, the disciples are much like you and I. We feel like when pressure comes, the only way to experience peace, and the only way to get through this moment is for the waves and the wind to go away. And Jesus says to them in another way, he says, listen, this world is filled with chaos. This world is filled with challenges and trouble and pressure. Instead of being focused on the winds and the waves going away, realize that what's the most important thing is that I am in the boat with you. That's all that matters. That's what it means to surrender under pressure. It's not asking for the pressure to go away, but realizing who's with us in the middle of it. Here's a truth for us. The spotlight, it doesn't change you. It exposes you. So what's it look like to surrender versus outperforming? Outperforming is saying this: I'm going to rise to the moment and I'm going to overcome. Surrender is, get this, falling to the level of your true identity. Falling to the level of your true identity. There's a difference. When I say surrender, most people think giving up. I'm not talking about giving up. I'm instead saying we need to give in. Give in to the power and authority, just like Travis Kelce did. Give in to the power and authority that has something, that has the authority and the power to be able to change, transform, or impact the situation in which we find ourselves. 2 Corinthians 10, 4 through 5 says this. The weapons we fight with, let me stop there. He says surrender doesn't mean we just put down our weapons, does it? Different type of surrender here. Because Paul's saying we do fight. We do fight. It's not about not fighting, but the weapons we fight with are not weapons of this world. We don't fight to overcome. We don't fight to defeat. On the contrary, the weapons we use have divine power to do what? Demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. What it means to surrender under pressure is to take captive every thought. What's that look like in real life? Let me give you a couple examples from Scripture. John the Baptist. Let me tell you where we are in this story in John chapter 3. John the Baptist was sent to go before Jesus to prepare the way for the coming of the Messiah, to share with all those, hey, one is coming after me, even greater than I, that will be able to wash away the sins of the world. John has a very successful ministry, very popular. He's baptizing people by the hundreds, by the thousands. And then all of a sudden, some of his disciples come to him and say, hey, this Messiah guy you've been talking about has just showed up. He's down the river. And a bunch of people are leaving here, and they're going down to his ministry to be baptized. What do you think about that? The thought is that he has, wow, I wonder what will happen to my ministry. The Spirit speaks as John takes captive that thought and says, he must increase and I must decrease. That's what it looks like to hold every thought captive. What about Jesus himself, the one that was perfect? The story in Matthew chapter 4 that you're familiar with, by the way, it says that John the Baptist baptizes Jesus in Matthew chapter 3. Jesus now is ready to begin his public ministry. Guess how his public ministry starts? It says the Spirit of God leads Jesus into the desert to be tempted. How about that? Satan didn't lead Jesus into the desert to be tempted. Did you know that? Go read that again in Matthew chapter 4. It says that God led Jesus into the desert to be tempted to start his public ministry. And we find him there 40 days in the desert fasting. Can you imagine how hungry Jesus must have been? The enemy comes to him and says, turn this stone into bread and feed yourself, for you must be hungry. Jesus' thought is, well, I'm pretty hungry. But how's the Spirit answer? Man shall not live on bread alone, but every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Taking a hold of a thought and holding in obedience to the word of God, and using that as our power and authority to overcome when pressure when life happens. Taking every thought captive is how faith shows up under pressure. I want to close with this, redefining winning. This moment happened on Sunday, November 9th this year, as the Los Angeles Rams were playing the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm going to show you a picture here in a few moments that changed everything for me. But let me explain the situation. You can go ahead and flip to the next slide. These aren't the pictures that changed everything, but this helps describe the moment. It's a good game, really good game. Two very good teams, very pivotal moment in this divisional rivalry. And George Kittle, some of you may know who George Kittle is. George Kittle will be a Hall of Fame tight end when he retires. He's one of the best players in the game right now. George, interesting guy. First time I met him on the sideline, he and I began to talk. And he comes up to me, and I won't share the expletives because we're in church. And he says to me, "Man, you are one big blank blank." And I said, "Yeah, I'm pretty good looking too." And he said, "Well, at least one of those is true." Character, good dude. Credible athlete. He will be in the Hall of Fame. And in this particular play, I just got a couple still shots here. What happens is George comes across the middle, and he's running at a full sprint. He's 6'4", 240, every bit of it. Running straight towards the sideline. Brock Purdy throws him the ball. He catches the ball. All his momentum is headed out of bounds. And somehow, some way, I told you these guys are incredible athletes. Somehow, some way, he gets control of his body. He plants his foot, his left foot on the sideline. Look how close that is. That's me trailing him there. Look how close that is. His left foot barely in bounds. His right foot barely in bounds. And he takes off from the 3-yard line and he dives. Go ahead and show that next picture. This is the picture that changed everything. He dives for the pylon here. The ball hits the pylon, which in the NFL, that's a touchdown. The ball then comes out. The crowd is going crazy. You can see me behind. I'm freaking out. Honestly, I'm going, what just happened? I mean, this is Superman. When you see this picture, what do you see? What thoughts come to mind? Anybody? Lindsay, what thought comes to mind when you see this picture? My daughter. Sorry? Control? Thought you were going to say, that's my dad. Thanks a lot, Lindsay. What else? What else do you see? Jay, what do you see? Perfect. Perfect. When this picture was sent to me as a gift, something clicked. And it fell into place for me. And that is, this is what winning looks like. You know, we tend in our culture to think winning is the player. The one scoring the winning touchdown. The one making an incredible play. This level of performance that's out of this world. But you know what? That's rarely how life works, isn't it? What I've discovered in my life is winning looks like this. Out of focus. In the background. Doing what you're supposed to be doing faithfully. That's what winning in the kingdom looks like right there. Success isn't always being the hero in the moment. It's being faithful in the assignment. We all have assignments, some more glamorous than others. It's being faithful in what it is God's called you to. Here's another thought for you. If you need applause to feel successful, you're following the wrong voice. You see, no one cheered me in that moment. They cheered George Kittle. They were happy when I made the judgment that he stayed in bounds and it was a touchdown. But they weren't cheering me, I promise you. They were cheering George Kittle's accomplishment. No one cheered me, but you know what? Heaven noticed. Heaven noticed. When excellence doesn't produce affirmation, let it produce a greater trust and dependence upon God. You know, there's messages in here for all of us. Even though you may not be an NFL referee, maybe you don't run a Fortune 500 company, maybe you're not doing all these things that the world would say is successful. Maybe you have a very simple life. But it's about influencing the environment around you with the assignment for which you've been given. John 15 says that we are to abide. I encourage you to go spend some time in that chapter. It's one of my favorite chapters in the Bible. It talks about abiding. It's about you and I being the branch and staying connected to the vine being Jesus. And here's the cool thing. The branch has one job. Stay connected. And here's what happens supernaturally. When we stay connected to the vine, you know what happens? A fruit is produced. Spiritual fruit. Love, joy, peace, goodness, kindness, self-control. All these things that we desire to have manifest in our life. There's one way to create it. We can pursue the counterfeit, or we can pursue the real thing. And the real thing says all you got to do is stay connected to the vine. And guess what? When we produce fruit, who is it for? It's not for you. It's for the world around you. Romans 8:19, one of my favorite scriptures, says this. When we live that kind of life, when we stay connected, when we redefine what winning looks like, and we realize that we can be out of focus in the background and impact the kingdom in incredible ways, it says this in Romans 8:19, all of creation waits in eager expectation for the sons and daughters of God to be revealed. What that literally means is the world is groaning for you to wake up to your true identity. We're not called, folks, we're not called to perfection. We're simply called to follow. Let me say this. God, this may be a shock to you, God is not interested in your sacrifice or your success. He wants your heart. You see, when excellence doesn't produce applause, no one cheers. You know, no one cheers us officials. No one cheers your excellence when you get the laundry done on time. Wouldn't that be cool? Is if, like George Kittle, you cross the goal line, you finish the laundry, you fold that last piece of clothes, and 80,000 people got up on their feet and cheered for you. Wouldn't that be an amazing thing? It's not the way it works, does it? No one cheers excellence when the laundry's done on time. No one cheers excellence when dinner miraculously shows up on the table. No one cheers excellence when you own your own business and you make your numbers. No one cheers when your checkbook balances. Kids, if you wonder what that is, ask your parents. No one applauds quiet obedience. But God sees it. And that's the only audience that matters. Here's my encouragement to you. When you fall, because you will, get up. Rejoice in blessings and don't cling to them. Release the outcomes. We're so focused on the outcomes. Our expectations are the greatest killers of joy. And our expectations are also one of the greatest limiting factors to what God wants to do in your life. Stop looking to the world for confirmation, because your identity is in Christ and Him alone. Here's my closing thought for you. When your excellence and your faithfulness don't produce affirmation from the world, remember this truth. The only approval that matters is the one that's already been given to you. winning in God's kingdom looks a lot like faithfulness in the background. Let me pray for us. Lord, I'd ask that you would teach us to be faithful in the background. Redefine how we see winning. Free us from striving for approval, and free us from fear of how others feel and see us. Renew our minds, anchor our identity in you alone, and may everything we do, seen or unseen, bring you glory. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and if you did, make sure to share it and subscribe so that we can get you all of these new messages as soon as they're available. I also want to take a moment and thank all of you who are a part of Foundry. Whether you support us financially or serve with us or just share these messages, it's because of you that we're able to make a difference. Thanks again for listening. God bless you.